Hi, welcome to Creeks to Peaks, The Understory, the podcast that highlights West Virginians, both near and far, who are doing amazing work in their respective fields, many of whom you may not even know about. Our goal is to bring your attention to these individuals, their stories, and how they connect to the state. In forestry terms, the understory means everything underneath the canopy, and those are exactly the people we're trying to highlight. Maybe not household names, but stars in their own right. So join us as we talk to our guests about who they are and where they come from. This podcast is produced by Flag Spruce Initiative, a West Virginia-based nonprofit whose mission is to invest in and advocate for the education, environment, and economy of West Virginia, or what we refer to as our three E's. To donate and find out more about Creeks to Peaks, The Understory, and Flag Spruce Initiative, visit www.flagspruce.org or follow us on Instagram. Welcome back for another episode of Creeks to Peaks, The Understory podcast. On this episode, we sit down with textile designer Lindsay Fout. A native of Mineral County, West Virginia, Lindsay graduated from West Virginia University with a degree in fashion design and soon found herself embarking on a cross-country move to California, which ultimately led to her career in the textile industry. Lindsay would venture out to start her own company, Last Chance Textiles, based out of Portland, Oregon, which has continued to grow in success and popularity. We'll talk to Lindsay about what made her interested in the textile field, how her Appalachian roots still inspire her work today, and how her products were featured on a huge Hollywood movie and a huge Hollywood star just this past year. Thanks again for tuning in, and please continue to spread the word. As always, take a listen. All right, today we're joined by Lindsay Fout of Last Chance Textiles. Lindsay, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to do this.
Yeah, we're happy you're here. So I want to start out by getting a little bit of background from you. Tell us who you are, you know, where you were originally from and what you're up to these days.
Sure. Well, I'm originally from New Creek, West Virginia, which is in Mineral County, sort of in the Eastern Panhandle. And I currently live in Portland, Oregon, and I'm a textile designer, and I have my own line of products, and the name of my company is Last Chance Textiles, like you said.
Nice. Good deal. You said you're from Kaiser?
From Kaiser, yeah. I went to Kaiser High School, but like the little community that I am actually from and where my parents still live is called New Creek, but it's unincorporated. There's just an elementary school, a church, and a post office there, and a little country market.
Nice. I don't know if I've ever been to New Creek. I have to think about that. I've driven through Kaiser, but it's been a while. You guys are right there on the Maryland border, correct?
Yeah. So we're in the Potomac River Valley. The Potomac River is what creates the border between West Virginia and Maryland, and that runs right through Kaiser.
Okay. So you went to Kaiser High School, and then after that, you studied at West Virginia University?
Yeah. So I went to WVU for fashion design. Fashion design and merchandising is what the program is. What also attracted me and made me want to go to WVU is, I guess, maybe it was just from TVs and TV and movies, but it sort of had that classic kind of all-American college experience. It has the beautiful green, like Woodburn Hall, the student union, the idea of going to school with people in all kinds of different majors and the sciences and literature. And I liked the idea of kind of being in that mix.
Yeah, you're right. It is kind of like a throwback to an all-American university. It's pretty neat. It's eclectic for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had never thought about that. That's a good way of looking at it. So once you were done at WVU, did you go for a master's or anything, or did you just go straight into the field that you studied?
I went straight into the field at that time. Similar to how I felt when I started WVU, I felt a little conflicted about which direction to head and where to head after college. Because I, like, as part of the fashion program, we took a field trip to New York City for a few days. We went to showrooms, manufacturing partners, saw like higher end fashion tracks, as well as like really large companies. But I still at that time, like, didn't love the idea of moving to New York City and being in such a big city. And around that same time, we were So I guess the listeners could know that Michael and I worked together in college at a program called Adventure West Virginia.
We did, yeah.
Do you want to explain like what that is?
Yeah, so I don't think we've really ever talked about it on any of the episodes, maybe the Eric Lovell one, which was the very first one. But an acquaintance of ours, our old boss, Greg Corio, and Forrest Schwartz, they started a program for a freshman orientation for WVU that focused on getting students, specifically at the time, freshmen outdoors, but also learning about the university and building new friendships through a myriad of activities, such as rock climbing, backpacking, whitewater rafting. There was a Habitat for Humanity. And so we were one of the, I think we were the third year that the program had been around. And Lindsay was one of the leaders, as well as I. And that's how we first met. And it's funny because, you know, I don't know about you, but a lot of my friendships to this day still revolve around Adventure West Virginia. And, you know, I've been groomsman in multiple weddings for Adventure West Virginia leaders. I was the officiant of a wedding for one of the guys, you know, roommates. And it's wild how it's expanded. But then we have a person like you who I haven't really kept in contact with, you know, for a while, but you've gone off to do such amazing stuff. And then we were still able, in a way, Adventure West Virginia brought us back together because we had that common thread. So that's a little bit about West Virginia, Adventure West Virginia.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think you're totally right. Like, we had such strong bonds. And I think because of the experiences and challenges that we shared, that really bonded a lot of us. And even though we speak, we just have that common ground that was strong.
That's true.
So going back to what I was saying and trying to decide like what to do after college, I kind of like New York City was exciting and appealing, but also still pretty intimidating to me. And also I just, you know, where I grew up, it was pretty rural and I always liked being close to nature. So my experience with Adventure West Virginia kind of opened my eyes to more of the world of outdoor apparel and athletic wear.
Okay.
Which at that time in, I guess this was like 2006, 2007, the outdoor apparel and athletic wear is not what it is today. Today, it's like a big part of the industry. Then it was a lot more niche and a lot smaller. Wasn't super obvious to me when I was younger that that was a trend, but Adventure West Virginia and just kind of like the clothes that we wore and the gear that we were looking at opened my eyes to that more technical apparel. So I started researching those types of brands and where they were located. And a lot of them were located because of their clientele and because of who the founders are, were not in big cities. They were in the mountains or Northern California. So that interest kind of put me on the track to sort of look beyond Los Angeles and New York City as possible places where I could get a job. And that's pretty much exactly what I did.
So you picked up or packed up, I should say, and moved out west right after college?
Yeah, pretty soon after college, I got a job at a company in Northern California. The town is called Truckee. It's like in the Lake Tahoe area. So beautiful place in the Sierra Nevada mountains. And I got a job designing and doing production management for a yoga, cycling, running women's wear company.
Wow. That's awesome. How long did you do that for?
I did that for 2 years. Really cut my teeth, learned a lot in 2 years.
I bet.
I mean, I think a lot of people will say they learn a lot more in like the first year of their career than they did in college. Not to say I didn't learn anything in college. It's just the hands-on experiences.
Yeah, you can't beat that. I agree. And then after that, what did you end up doing? How long has Last Chance been around for?
So November will be, I think, our 8th year in business.
So you had some time after the Truckee yoga studio or yoga apparel in Last Chance.
Yeah. So what I did is I liked that job and I liked being a fashion designer, but it didn't feel like I had quite found my niche yet. And then in talking to the other designer at that job, who was a little older and a little more experienced than me, and a couple other people, they sort of pointed me in the direction of textile design. Just looking at the way that I would sketch and draw and what my other interests were, they kind of pointed me in that direction. And so I started exploring that, and I started looking at going back to school either to get a master's degree or some kind of additional education in that more specialized field. And I applied to some different schools. And at that time, I actually ended up going to a trade school in Los Angeles called FITM. It's the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising. So it's not even a master's degree. It's just it was a 2-year program, but super specialized. Like, you kind of dive in and you go hard and fast for 2 years. It's a really intensive program, but you learn a lot. So I did a program there called Textile and Surface Design. And you learn how to put your drawings into repeat patterns, like you would see on clothing or in curtains, wherever, you name it. And as well as learning the basics of like fabric and textile constructions, like weaving, knitting, all sorts of stuff like that.
Okay. And so, sorry, I'm not very good at some of this stuff, but how does textile design differ from fashion design? What are the main components of that?
So basically, textile design just kind of is the precursor to fashion design in some ways, I guess you could say. So it's the actual fabric that then fashion designers will choose to create their garments out of. So in fashion design, you're focused more on creating the 3-dimensional garment, like a dress, the construction of that dress, how the pattern pieces come together, making that dress in all the different sizes that it needs to come in, choosing the materials, choosing the finishes, the zippers, the buttons, all of that is fashion design. It has a lot more to do with the construction of like a 3D, 3-dimensional garment. Whereas textile design is a little more 2-dimensional in that you're designing the actual fabric that will be cut into a garment. Textile design can be very broad because there's so many applications for textiles, everything from interiors like upholstery fabric, pillows, cushions, curtains. Textile designers could work for a car manufacturing company designing the upholstery for the inside of cars. They could design carpets that go in casinos. Like,
gotcha. That makes sense. Yeah, that is a broad track. With what you do now, are you marrying the two up then? Because you're also making the patterns for your products, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
So would that be considered more on the fashion design side?
So most of my, I guess I consider it more textiles because most of my products, I don't really make garments. I make accessories. So mostly it's bandanas and scarves.
Right. Okay.
So they have some specifications that are related to fashion design, like the finishing of the hems, the stitching, things like that, but it's pretty flat and 2-dimensional. So I would say I'm a lot more into my textile design background because I'm working with how the printed pattern is on the textile, as well as I also design wovens. So when I say I design wovens, it's the plaids and stripes, and also the construction of a woven scarf.
Allied Artists of West Virginia is a nonprofit, educational, and cultural association whose mission is to encourage, nurture, and present the work of West Virginia artists to the community. Since 1930, Allied Artists has encouraged artists to show their work, fostered the development of new works, and furthered artistic interests in the community. If you're interested in learning more about Allied Artists of West Virginia, check out their website, alliedartistswv.org. Now let's get back to the podcast.
So you said a little bit ago that you're about to hit 8 years for Last Chance Textiles, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
What made you decide, hey, I am going to start my own company and do what I want to do?
Yeah. So it didn't happen. It kind of happened slowly. So after I went back to school for textile design, I worked at a wallpaper company for a little while. And that was great. A lot of great experience. And I really put my surface design skills. And what I mean by surface design skills is actually drawing the patterns that would go, in this case, onto wallpaper. But just as easily, this could translate to clothing, or like I mentioned earlier, curtains, pillows, whatever. So I worked there for a few years. Then I actually started working back in fashion, but as a textile designer, I basically designed the prints and patterns that went on women's dresses. Did that freelance for a few years. At the same time, I started teaching textile design as well. And in between like my freelance textile design job in the fashion industry, teaching, I did have a little extra time on my hands. So I just started playing in my backyard with natural dyes and kind of exploring the world of natural dyes. And natural dyes are just dyeing fabric with plant and insect material. And even you can even dye with like mushrooms and lichen. And there's a whole rainbow of colors that you can achieve from natural dye sources, which also tied into my love of nature and hiking. So I could go out on hikes and forage for natural materials and then use them to dye fabrics.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I was kind of just doing that as a hobby and just sort of playing around with dyeing blanks, like t-shirts and blank scarves that I would get, like plain white scarves and dyeing with that.
That was going to be my question was, you're taking like a piece of plain white material. Is that what you start with? It has to be white. And then you're going out on these hikes and you're bringing back different lichens and stuff. And then you're just seeing how the color would react and how it would look.
Yes. And it's actually quite scientific, even if the environment isn't that controlled, like it was in my kitchen in my backyard. It's not a laboratory, but there is a science to it. So there's a certain way that you have to wash and prepare your fabrics in order to get the dye to stick. There's a process called mordanting, which is using salts or other things that doesn't change the fabric color yet. It just coats the fabric in something that then the dye will want to stick to, like the walnut dye will want to stick because of this special process that you've done ahead of time. And certain dyes will stick better at certain temperatures. So in most cases, you need heat, but not in all cases. You might need the water to be at a certain pH level in order for the dye to stick. And luckily there's a lot of books and research that you can do to understand this. There's a lot of people who have figured this out before. So, but it's still an experience and an experiment to try it for yourself.
A little bit of trial by error.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wild. I never considered that before. That's really cool. Do you have a favorite, plant or insect or something you've come across that you like to dye with?
I don't use these in my current product line, but when I was used to be, I was able to because I was dyeing everything myself for the first 2 years I was in business. I loved dyeing with acorns and black walnuts. And the reason why I actually like dyeing with those the most is because my parents would collect them for me on their farm in West Virginia where I grew up, and then they'd send them out to me. So it kind of was this connection to my roots.
That's awesome.
The trees.
That I love it
back home. Yeah.
I love it. That is so cool. That is so cool. Sorry. I didn't mean to get you off track, but I was so fascinated by that.
Yeah.
So you were saying that, during that time you were experimenting, and then I'll let you get back to where you're going with that.
Sure. I was experimenting with that. And I wanted to be able to take these processes and apply them to a product that I could sell. I liked the idea of it not being fashion, actually, because of my experience in fashion design. I was like, man, it's complicated to make a garment. I kind of like want to do something a little more simple and humble and straightforward. And so I landed on bandanas because I've always worn bandanas. My family wears bandanas. To me, it's something that's incredibly useful. Something that I've always loved wearing and has always given me like a little extra confidence when I have one on. So I landed on bandanas, and then I was able to incorporate this new hobby of natural dye along with my textile design surface design skills, which again is drawing the pretty patterns that go on the bandanas. I think I discovered when I was in school that I really liked drawing scarf patterns. I like the way that scarf patterns can kind of, they mirror and they rotate, and it's this little problem. Each one is kind of a little puzzle and problem to solve to create something really beautiful, but within a square design.
That's awesome. That's cool. And you have one of your products on right now.
Yeah, of course.
That's very cool. Giving you confidence at the moment?
Yes. Always.
I like it.
My comfort and my confidence. Nice. To have a bandana on.
Okay. You started doing that, and that was in 2015-ish time frame, or is that, yeah, that was a little before?
I think late 2015 is when I started doing that. And my first production run of bandanas. So I drew the patterns myself. I dyed the blank scarves. I had a friend sew my hems for me because despite my background in fashion design, I don't love sewing. So I had my friend sew the hems for me. And then I had a local screen printer actually print the designs on the scarves after I dyed them so that it would be permanently affixed and it would be washable. So I made 25 to begin with. So I started my business very small and tiny, just for the sake of making something, just for the sake of executing and finishing something and putting it out there in the world. I didn't really have a lot of expectations about where that was going to lead at that moment.
Okay. But where were you located when all this was going on?
I was in Los Angeles.
You're in LA? All
yeah. Right.
And your company, though, now you're in Portland, Oregon?
Now I'm in Portland, Oregon. We moved, my partner and I moved to Portland, Oregon in like January, February of 2020. So we haven't really been here that long. And we actually moved here right before the pandemic. So
I was going to say that. Time. Right before. Yeah.
Yeah. A good time to get out of the big city, but a weird time to try to make connections and make friends and explore a new place.
Have there been many struggles in creating a company from scratch?
Oh, yes. So many struggles. So I think because like how I was just explaining, we started out so tiny. I didn't necessarily have a clear business plan or even a plan on how to scale. So we've kind of grown steadily and I think with a lot of integrity, but scaling anything, any kind of production when you're making something is not easy. So at each different scale, whether you're making 50 bandanas at a time in your backyard, like I was,
yeah,
even moving up to 200 bandanas at a time, you kind of have to do it a completely different way. And then when your business grows a little bit more and you have to make 500 bandanas, it's like we kind of had to go back to the drawing board each time. We assess the most efficient way to create our product. So scaling has been difficult. If I ever started another business, I would not do it the way that I started this business. I would get capital up front and just kind of go in with a really clear business plan. I mean, that's the other aspect of it too, is I come from a creative background. So I've had to learn a lot about the business side.
The business side, yeah.
When my business was smaller and it was just kind of, I had two other jobs, I didn't have to rely on it for my income. So it was okay that it was kind of, it made enough money to like buy into the next production run, but it definitely wasn't making enough money to support myself or my family. So I think in 2018, I got laid off from, not really laid off because it was a freelance gig, but it was such, had been such consistent work for the past 4 years that it was almost as if it was my job that I mainly relied on for my income. And they downsized and I got cut loose from working for that company, which again was just doing the textile design for fashion for women's dresses. That's when I decided to go full-time working for Last Chance, working for myself. So that was a huge adjustment and took a lot of just throwing things on the wall and like seeing how I could couldn't make enough money to get by.
I think that will probably make you appreciate it in the long run because you put so much sweat and tears and patience and anger into the process. It wasn't necessarily handed to you or anything. You've taken a lot of lumps probably.
Yeah. It's just been a roller coaster, really.
Yeah. I can't even imagine. How did you come up with the name Last Chance Textiles?
Okay. So Last Chance, it's kind of a story. So we were talking about how I moved out west after college. So it kind of harkens back to that time and that first trip across the country. I was with my mom and we were driving across the country where she was moving me out west. And I had never been really past the Rockies before. And we were someplace, I think in Nevada, and we started seeing these road signs that would say no services for the next 100 miles. And I found that really astonishing, terrifying, but also really kind of thrilling and exciting. And Last Chance is kind of about that moment when you're on the precipice of the unknown, the wilderness, and you're kind of like, okay, I've got to make sure that I have everything that I need to feel prepared and be ready for this adventure that I'm about to go on, where there's not going to be these services. Because, you know, growing up in West Virginia, it's very rural. However, nothing's actually very far away. Like,
true, yeah.
Being in the middle of nowhere and you're, but every 20 miles, you're going to find a gas station or something, I think.
Yeah.
Or like, there's going to be somebody help
there's
you.
There's going to be some, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you're never really truly stranded in the middle of nowhere. As much as it can seem like it in West Virginia, it's not as vast. It just cannot compare to the vastness of the West.
No, you're right. You're right. I had to learn that in my 20s. I don't think, well, as a kid, I was out West, but we did some adventure West Virginia trips, driving across country to backpack for a week in South Utah. And there was some eye-opening experiences that I, in terms of just geography and landscape, that I was not prepared for. It was, you know, it was breathtaking, but it was like, wow, I didn't know this type of, I don't know, wilderness or lack of amenities existed for that far of a gap. But
yeah, completely. Yeah, so it was a really exciting time. And that experience and that kind of shock has always stuck with me, as well as the comfort of feeling really prepared. And for me, a bandana is something that I've always taken on every little hike, every big backpacking trip, every car trip. Like, I just always have one with me. So it's part of that like moment when you're getting ready, but you're gathering those things that you know you're going to need.
Very
it's
cool.
The last chance.
Yeah. I love it. You're talking about scaling and how your company has grown. On a typical weekly basis, how many bandanas are you guys producing?
Part of what has happened with scaling is that we do less production runs, but we do bigger production runs. So the production run that we're going to do of cotton bandanas, that's going to be here in a couple months, is I think around 6,000. And I'm hoping that'll last maybe a little less than a year. That might sound like a lot, but in the fashion industry, it's actually, we're still very small. Okay. We're still a small company. Yeah.
Yeah. And you said that's cotton. You also deal with silk as well?
Yeah, we deal with silk bandanas as well. We have a signature bandana. It's in a fabric called silk noil, which is a little bit different than what you normally think of silk as, something smooth, something a little finer and fancier. Silk noil is that same, it comes from the same source, which is from a caterpillar, a moth, the silk moth, from the cocoon. It's from that same source, but the way that the yarn is spun is a little bit different. So normally they unravel the cocoon and it creates this long filament fiber, which is really like, in theory, infinity long. It's sort of like if you think about fishing line, it's long, it's very smooth. That is taken up and cut into shorter pieces and then spun into a yarn. So the silk noil bandanas that we make have actually more of a textured surface. They're matte, they're not shiny, but they feel really cozy and warm around your neck, and they're washable. So I actually think they're great for traveling, for wearing outdoors, because they keep you warm when it's cold outside and cool, and they're nice and cool and absorb your sweat when it's warmer outside.
Sounds perfect for the outdoor industry too.
It is, yeah.
Wow.
The natural, I know, and when we think about the outdoors, we think about all these like synthetic fibers, but there's a lot of natural fibers that have amazing magical properties that I think can compete with a lot of the synthetic fibers that are out there.
Wow. I never would have thought that. I've actually never heard of silk noil before either. That's pretty cool. Where are you sourcing your materials from?
So slowly I've moved a lot of my sourcing and work with a lot of vendors in India. We first started working with a partner in India, and I think not too long, and sorry, it was close to the beginning, I think it was late 2016, 2017, we started working with an NGO called Women Weave. And they produce, because at that time I wanted to do a woven plaid scarf, like a larger scarf that you could wrap around your neck a couple times. So a lot bigger than a bandana, but still kind of cozy, everyday, casual scarf, but in a woven plaid or stripe. So I started researching who could do a hand weave, because I also wanted that like kind of hand woven natural texture. And I found the NGO Women Weave, sent them plaid designs that I had drawn by hand. And it was a pretty big risk. I think it was the first kind of big risk that I took with my business, to outsource these plaid scarves. And what I got back from them, which was a pretty small order, was amazing. It exceeded my expectations in every way. Just the quality, the craftsmanship, the artisan nature of them, how they took my designs and kind of interpreted them into their process, was so beautiful, and kind of started to, I mean, I always knew that India is known around the world for its textiles. It's been exporting textiles for thousands of years. It's a very famous place, and they have so many different sectors and specialities and heritage craft traditions there. And that kind of opened, working with Women Weave on that project kind of opened my eyes to like what kind of possibilities and capabilities that India has. And then, yeah, so over the years, we've kind of slowly started working with more vendors and more people in India.
Wow. Do you have to do a lot of travel to India?
So far, I've only been there twice, and I've been twice in the past 3 years, but ideally I would love to keep that rhythm of traveling there.
That would be fun. Yeah.
Every 2 to 3 years, I think would be great.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I haven't been to India yet. The Himalayas are beautiful from what I understand. I've got to go check out the Indian Himalayas.
Yeah, it's a huge country. And so I feel like there's a lifetime of exploration. It's a big country and it's also very diverse. So there's a lot to explore just within my small niche of textiles, much less other things that you could be interested in, like, yeah.
Outdoor travel, adventure travel, yeah, climbing. That'd be awesome. Where do you source your inspiration for your designs?
A lot of my inspirations come from historical sources, mostly textiles, but other kinds of art too. Growing up, I sort of always had a strong connection to older things. My mom always collected different textiles, antiques, like our house was filled with that kind of thing. She collected a lot of like Appalachian craft textiles, woodworking, things like that around the house. So I've always sort of had this connection to pieces that have a story, that have a history to them. And so I look a lot at historical objects for my inspiration. So I think one of my favorite parts of the design process is the research process. Before I even begin sketching, I like to look at books. I look on, within the last 10 years, a lot of museums now have digital catalogs of their collections, as well as auction houses. So I'll do online research looking at objects like that, as well as I have a big library of lots of textile books and other kind of historic antique books and things like that that I like to look at.
Very cool. I like it.
The fall season is upon us, and what better way to enjoy it in the Mountain State than by checking out Arrowhead Bike Farm and Campground, located in Fayetteville, West Virginia. Whether you're looking for a full-day New River Gorge mountain bike rental, hankering for some fantastic food, need a place to camp for the weekend, or just want to grab a beer, Arrowhead Bike Farm has it all. Their campground is conveniently located near the Arrowhead Stack Loop Trail System and Long Point Trail, giving you the opportunity to hike or bike right from your campsite into the New River Gorge. To learn more about Arrowhead Bike Farm and Campground, check out their website at www.arrowheadbikefarm.com. Now let's get back to the podcast.
Your company gained some notoriety recently when the movie Knives Out Glass Onion was released. They featured some of your products, correct? Daniel Craig was sporting some.
Yeah, so Daniel Craig, who plays Benoit Blanc in that franchise, was wearing two of my bandanas in the film.
That's so cool.
It was so cool. It was kind of shocking. So, okay, what's interesting about this is this came from a WVU connection, how this thing came about.
Really?
Yes. So one of my classmates, Adam, who I went to fashion design school with at WVU, had since moved out to Los Angeles. And he was dating this woman, Anna, who I met through him. And they are not together anymore, but over the years, her and I stayed connected. She became a customer and a supporter of mine when I started my business. And we always just were friendly and would chat online sometimes. And she's a costume designer. And when her boss, Jenny Egan, who's the costume designer on the film, said, oh, I think we want to put Daniel Craig in some kerchiefs for his character in this film, my friend Anna suggested my name. And so then she texted me and she was one day, and this was like in 2021, May of 21, I think, she texted me one day and she was like, hey, my boss wants kerchiefs. We're working on Knives Out. It's hush hush, but I think we're going to put it on the lead. You know who that is. And she was like, can you overnight FedEx me some bandanas if we place an order today? And I was like, yep, you got it.
That is amazing. Yeah. That was so cool. And I didn't realize it until you had made a post about it on social media. And I had to go back and watch it a second time. I was like, wow, that is awesome.
Yeah. And I honestly, like, it was exciting to get that text from her and send those off, but I had pretty low expectations. Because so much in film, in the movie industry, I know just living adjacent to it in Los Angeles, so much stuff gets cut, doesn't make it in the film. A bandana is pretty small accessory. So I thought, oh, maybe I'll get like a little peek at one of my bandanas if I'm lucky. But it actually was kind of a big part of his character in the film and was sort of a signature look. So
definitely, definitely. That's cool. Yeah, I understand. You you don't want to get your hopes up. But, you know, deep down inside, you're like, this would be amazing. And it turned out amazing. So that was really cool to see. Have you seen any boon to your business from that?
I have a little bit. And what's interesting is I've seen the demographic change a little bit of my customer, or I have an additional demographic that I can now kind of appeal to, which is this fashionable man. And what's also been interesting, so I've seen some more orders coming in from Europe, which has been nice, as well as the purchasing habits of this new customer. I didn't really realize, but a nice thing about these fashionable guys is they buy handkerchiefs the same way that a lot of people will buy other small accessories like socks or, I don't know, other things, in that they buy a lot at a time. So I'm bigger orders, which is nice.
And they do a bunch of different patterns so that they have options. Okay.
Yeah. So I have, like, on my website, I have the option of doing like a 3-pack or a 5-pack. So I've seen those orders increase as a result of being featured in the film, just because of the buying habits of this new demographic that I'm now kind of appealing to.
That is awesome. Very cool. Where do you hope to see Last Chance Textiles in the next 5 years?
I would love to continue growing my business a little bit. I don't need to become this huge thing, but I would like it to become more of a steady and secure income for my family. I'd love to be able to hire more employees. Right now, I have part-time help. I have a woman, Olivia, who comes twice a week. But I'd love to, like, have more employees. I think that would be great. That's, I think, one of the best things about small businesses is how much they give back to their community and how they create jobs. So that's something, definitely a goal that I have for my business. Ethics and sustainability are also a thing that we are constantly working on. So we have goals just to create less waste, get more ethical certifications at our factories, things like that.
Great. Do you have any brick and mortar stores, or is it all online?
It's all online. And we have our one e-commerce website. I don't have any Last Chance Textiles branded brick and mortar stores, but we do have a wholesale component of our business. And I think I'm in over 200 boutiques, like, around the country, and even a couple in Europe too. So you can find us maybe in wherever your listeners are. If you go to our website and scroll down to the stockist list, we're, I don't think we're in every state yet, but we're in a lot of places, mostly in independent boutiques, which I love. I love working with other small retailers. A lot of them are kind of like in the downtown area of these little towns all over the country.
Are you in West Virginia yet?
You know what? I don't think I am. And what's with that?
Hey, there's a future. There's one of your 5-year goals, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It needs to be a 6-month goal. It needs to happen really soon.
That would be great. What's the best advice you could give young West Virginians who might be interested in working in the fashion or textile design industry?
Sure. Well, one thing, and I guess this is kind of broad and applies to anyone going into the arts or creative field at all, is to just keep drawing, keep creating, keep making stuff. I think, you know, some conversations that I've had with artist friends recently is making quote unquote bad art or getting through bad ideas is just sometimes it's just a part of the process. So I think it's just to keep going and don't get frustrated when things are hard. A lot of times I feel like my best ideas are just waiting in line behind a few bad ideas that I kind of have to get out of the way first. So I think that is kind of broad advice for anyone in the creative field is just keep creating. Because I think nowadays, like with social media and everything, we see everyone's best work on display, but that's only the tip of the iceberg, right? Like
you don't see the mistakes they made, the ones that they weren't happy with.
Yeah, you don't see all that work that they scrapped.
Right. No, that's great.
But it's necessary and is kind of just, it's not even a mistake or a failure. It's just part of the process.
Part of the process, yeah.
So yeah, just keep creating and try to find your own unique point of view, because I think everyone inherently has their own unique point of view, but it took me years to find that. So it's there somewhere. You just have to do enough work to uncover it. And then specifically in, well, I guess this is another broad one too, but it is really all in who you know. And I think when I was younger, I thought that that meant I had to be really good at networking and find the most important person in the room and try to like schmooze with them, which I'm sort of shy. So that was never really something that I felt comfortable doing. I feel I have a little bit of social anxiety, things like that. But in my career, I found that that's not actually necessarily how it works. It's more about making authentic connections with your fellow students, with your teachers, with the people that you work with early in your career and throughout your career is just kind of being an authentic person. And I think that's an advantage that a lot of West Virginians have. West Virginians are really down to earth and authentic people. So I think lean into that. And you don't have to know the most high up important, quote unquote, important person to advance in your career. You just have to have someone in the room with that person who's willing to throw your name in the ring.
And you, I think it's also a good point as well to consider, you never happen to realize at the time that a person that you were just nice to and made a connection with, how they could pay dividends for, you know, your career, your life, years and years down the road, just because they remembered you being a genuine person.
Yeah, that's so true. You just don't burn bridges and you're kind. And you just be yourself.
Yeah, I like it. All right, Lindsay. So to finish up, we like to do a lightning round at the end of our podcast. I'm going to ask you a few questions about West Virginia and your thoughts and opinions, and we'll wrap it up. So first one that I'm going to start with is favorite West Virginia artist, any field.
Okay. One of my favorites is this guy, Jim Schaefer, who made brooms. I actually don't think he's doing it anymore, but he did for a long time. And really just like what you think of a broom with like a wooden handle and a straw brush that's stitched together.
Yeah.
I just love that intersection of a craft and skill intersecting with something so practical that we use in our everyday life. And that kind of broom works so well.
That's pretty cool. Where's he located out of?
I think he was somewhere in southern West Virginia,
okay,
near Beckley, and I believe he retired from broom making, but I was looking into it not long ago, and I guess he sold some of his equipment to this woman in Romney, West Virginia.
Yeah.
Her name's Wanda Hott, so she's kind of was inspired by him and is continuing his tradition. So I love that this kind of dwindling skill set like found its maker and can continue that legacy.
That's really cool. I feel like I have heard of Jim Schaefer before, but man, I'm glad you brought that up because that's unique. I like that. That's really cool. All right. Next question is, what is your favorite West Virginia tradition?
I would say that would fall into like the textile traditions. So my great grandmothers both made braided rag rugs. So that's like a floor covering made from scrap fabric, a lot of reused clothing. And they're beautiful because they're all just like these different colors, and they're used from scrap, like I said, scrap fabric. So it's like clothing from my family that they wore, yeah, repurposed into a rug. And we still have some of the rugs that they made that my mom has in her house now.
Wow, that's really cool. We're staying with like a unique tradition kind of sense. I like that. Like, you have a broom maker and you have rag rugs. That's really cool. I like that. And then next one is favorite place to visit in West Virginia.
Oh, I have to say home. So I'm lucky in that my parents still live on our family home place, and it's partly forested with woodlands and then partly like hay fields, and there's an old barn. So just going home and kind of piddling around the forest and being surrounded by all those familiar sights and sounds is just a really grounding experience.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think Kylan probably does as well. We have a family farm that we grew up on, and we don't make it home nearly as much as we would like, but that's near and dear to our hearts. So I can empathize with that. What about favorite West Virginia celebrity?
Yeah, I have a couple. So Bill Withers is one, the singer and songwriter.
Yeah.
Love him. And I also like Henry Louis Gates Jr., who's actually from Mineral County, which is where I grew up too.
And he's a professor at Harvard?
I'm not sure I know he's done that in the past. I'm not sure if he's currently a professor or not, but he also hosts that show on PBS, Finding Your Roots.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he interviews different like celebrities and like personalities and goes into their genealogy and where they come from. It's a really great show. It's really like profound and very nerdy, but for something so nerdy, it's like also can be really shocking and dramatic because people are often like so surprised what the true history of their family is.
Right, right. Man, I need to reach out to him. He might be a really great guest if we could get him on the program.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would be really cool. And then we like to end with Dear West Virginia, which is part of our Flag Spruce Initiative project. And if you could finish the sentence, Dear West Virginia, what would you say?
Dear West Virginia, let's show the world who we really are. I think there are so many different voices and stories that go beyond like the stereotypes and assumptions that outsiders make about West Virginia. Our state isn't perfect, and it's not the most diverse place, but it's far more beautiful and culturally diverse than I think a lot of times we get credit for. And so I know you're doing that work, so I applaud you for that.
We're trying. We're just one spoke in the wheel. So that was a great answer. Thank you very much. That was great. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us on the program. It's been a pleasure learning about your career and your upbringing and everything you've accomplished so far. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us on Creeks to Peaks, The Understory, the podcast that highlights West Virginians, both near and far. If you enjoyed the podcast, want to hear other West Virginia success stories, or would like to donate to other Flag Spruce Initiative projects, please visit www.flagspruce.org. Also, feel free to reach out to us on Instagram. We'd love to hear any recommendations you have on other people that you might consider part of West Virginia's understory. Thanks, and have a good one.